أحلى سفينة ولا قلوع وما بشوف إلا غيوم جاي من الطلوع بينزلوا يعبوا من عيون الطلوع وكل ساعة بيعملوا ساحبة
The music is called Waqif Ala Shat Bahir, or Standing on the Shore. Hanan vocalist Joe Bedway, the oud, Yaqub Ghanim on the quanun, Aki Abadia, and Naeem Karakhan violin, drum, woodblocks, and chorus. Composer is Joglu Al-Damnoor. You know, I'm telling you who is who here out of a courtesy or perhaps a reverence of the past. I think all these people are long dead now. Waqif Ala Shat Bahir is taken from the Music of Arab Americans Retrospective Collection, 1997, Rounder Records. I already feel short on time, so I'm going to go ahead and get right into it. The show is Mideast Madness. I'm Ren Tuwail. How do you do? I'm the son of a Palestinian man who happens to have been Christian. I was raised Christian. And the son of an all-American European stock mother. And so, go grab a pencil and paper. I'll write a pen if you can't find a pencil. So you can copy down the phone numbers and an address or two. A couple of brief as I can make them public service announcements. We too need donations. We have to keep free radio on the air somehow. We do not get grants. At least not corporate grants. Our policies actually forbid, severely restrict the kind of grants we will accept. Programmers pay the bulk of the dues. I am a programmer. I have to pay a monthly fee. Which reminds me, I didn't get a money order today that I'm supposed to pay here. But they don't care. As long as I pay by the middle of the month. So I'm asking you listeners to contribute as often and as much or as little as you can. Anything would be very happily accepted. It is a life and death situation. We might be good for another month and a half, couple of months. I don't want to alarm anyone. After all, that seems to be the consistent case around here. It's strictly hand-to-mouth as far as Free Radio is concerned. Please send your donations to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or just FRSE, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Also, we need a new studio. Free Radio needs a new studio. Our, perhaps somewhat extensive, requirements include it being near downtown, having 24-hour access, having access to a bathroom. We're asking for roughly 150 square feet. We cannot afford to go higher than $300 a month. You're currently paying $500 a month, I think. Preferably utilities included, no parking tax, secure, dry, etc. If you think you might have anything that's roughly 150 square feet around or less than $300 a month that we can use, with 24-hour access. Please go to the freakradio.org website. Get in touch with someone. Or you can call me here at the studio. Studio numbers are as follows. Line number one. Area code 831-427-3772. That's 427-3772. Line two. Also live and direct to the studio is 831-469-3119. 469-3119. This is Mid-East Madness. I am Ren, and here we go with one angle on the latest from Gaza, from the Gaza Strip. This is entitled, Israel is Dangerously Breaking the Ceasefire. This was written by Maria Del Mar Fernandez, a friend of mine from a few years ago, dispatched today, 3 December 2012. Maria is currently in the Gaza Strip. Here's a preface. The report below is from Maria Del Mar Fernandez, one of the board members of the Free Gaza Movement. She will remain in Gaza until the end of the year and will make periodic reports to us. Gaza City, December 3, 2012. In the last 4 days, Israelis have arrested 31 fishermen, destroyed a boat, kept another one, they say, for 3 years, destroyed 4 motors of the boats. By the way, Maria is a native of Spain, and she does speak English, but I hope you can forgive her slight misspellings and somewhat strange use of words here. Destroyed 4 motors of the boats. They say also that Israelis are not shooting any more water cannons, but real fire. And when they arrest Palestinians, one of their main interests in interrogations is to get information about internationals. What she's referring to there are non-governmental organizations, commonly referred to as NGOs, people from outside of Israel or outside of Palestine, who may be reporting, they may be doing a study, or they may be just humanitarily trying to help the Gazan Palestinians. Returning to the article. Most of the fishermen in the Fishermen's Union and another fishing association decided the day before yesterday not to go out to the sea because they cannot bear that more fishermen are arrested and the boats badly damaged. There is still one fisherman kept in prison. The decision was also to wait for the next 10 days so that conversations in Cairo about the ceasefire are completed in order to be sure of the 6 miles, in order to be sure of the 6 miles nautical miles. I think she means 6 miles nautical limit that Israel has imposed on the Gazans. Most of the information is published by PCHR in Gaza. Forgive me for not knowing offhand what PCHR stands for. On Wednesday, December 5, this coming Wednesday, fishermen and internationals will demonstrate at the harbor, and we have been asked to bring the flags of our own countries to make visible our support and to spread the news as much as possible. Yesterday, some fishermen dared to go out fishing because they said they preferred to be dead rather than stop bringing food for their families. As for the farmers, they have been shot at in Beit Laya, where we visited one of the families. And also yesterday, Israelis were shooting at farmers and internationals in the buffer zone of Khan Yunis. That's why Rosa, the Italian international here, asked most of us today to go to support them. But in the early morning, they phoned that there was heavy shooting, real fire, of course. And they could not go to their lands in these conditions, even accompanied by internationals. So some of them have gone just to interview the farmers. The statement for the European parliamentaries and to the world should be that Israel is breaking dangerously the ceasefire as people cannot bear this situation of being denied their most elemental right to life and security. Breaking. Two people have been dead since the quote-unquote ceasefire, one in the south and one in the north, with an unexploded bomb of the last attack. And by north and south, I believe she's referring to the entirely to the Gaza Strip, the south end of Gaza and the north end of Gaza. All right, let's look a little more closely at this. Again, Maria Del Mar Fernandez is a fellow sailor with me when we went in 2008 to the Gaza Strip, having left Larnaca, Cyprus, and successfully landing in the port of Gaza City. We stayed for about a week, and then we sailed back. Now, why would Israelis be arresting fishermen? And I do not know the current status of the Gazan rockets. I do not know if any rockets or mortars or small arms fire have been fired from the Gaza side of the border. But even if they have, why would they be arresting and, in one case, killing fishermen? Israel has imposed a 6-mile limit, as she mentioned in this article, in this dispatch, limiting that's how far the Gazan Palestinians can go to do their fishing, even though the internationally recognized Gazan territorial waters extend at least 30 miles from the shore. I know in the past Israel has lessened this bit by bit from 30 miles to 20 to 10, etc. Supposedly, the Israelis want to prevent the transfer of weapons via the sea, but they know damn well that they're firing on and stopping and harassing, and in one case, destroying fishermen who live there who are just fishing. They know, they've done this so often, they know what's going on. The Israeli Navy does know whether or not people are illegally bringing in contraband weaponry. Internationals will demonstrate at the harbor, and we've been asked to bring flags of our own countries to make visible our support and to spread the news as much as possible. Well, obviously, Maria is referring to an influx of a few international supporters, activist supporters, who, one way or another, find their way into Gaza. No, they're not Iranian dupes or Syrian front men. These are people who care about the plight of the Palestinians. As for the farmers, they have been shot at in Beit Lahia, where we visited one of the families. Now, this also is something that has been going on apparently for years, at least a couple of years, and probably since shortly after 2006 when Hamas took over, politically took over the Gaza Strip. all we seem to hear about in the United States is how these guys, you know, Israel has Operation Cast Lead in December of 2008. And then they have Pillar of Defense just a few weeks, a couple of months ago. You know, that's what we hear about over here. But people are not getting consistent and reliable reports about the harassment, small arms harassment, and occasional incursion of tanks that continue to maim and kill Palestinians, having nothing to do with Operation Cast Lead or any of the highbrow Israeli invasions. I mean, another good friend of mine was shot at while she was working in the fields at a farmer at a farmer's property back in 2008. Okay, so much for Gaza. Now we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk about what happened at the United Nations last week when the UN overwhelmingly permitted Palestine, not the Palestinian Authority, but a state of Palestine, as it is written in the resolution, to become a member of the United Nations, but as, let's see, what was the restriction? As a non-state. Palestine made, okay, so it's not state of Palestine as far as the UN is concerned, but they, as opposed to last year when, at about this time, 12 months ago, when the Palestine Authority attempted to receive recognition as a sovereign state, that was, seems to me, a majority of the General Assembly said yes, but of course, having veto power in the Security Council, total veto power, the United States said no. As a puppet of Israel, the United States government said no, no to a Palestinian state. Now, as having observer status, actually having had observer status for a long time, now it is an official member of the UN as a non-state. That's the situation. Here is something that I sent along to a great many friends. It is included with a YouTube entitled Israel and Palestine, a Very Short Introduction. So I sent the YouTube link to my friends along with this note. Sent this today to Obama, my senators, and congressperson here in California. You know the drill. You may use talking points, but write your own originally scripted letter. And here is my letter. The UN and Palestine. Both Congress and the White House have a history of enabling Israel to oppress native Palestinians while expanding legal settlements and literally stealing Arab lands and resources, not to mention sabotaging previous peace processes. Now, on top of all that, Congress is engaged in financially and administratively punishing the Palestinian Authority for seeking recognition by the World Authority, the UN, out of sheer desperation. After 64 years, they have come to realize that they cannot rely on either Israel or the U.S. to make honest or realistic moves towards peace, justice, and equality. U.S. actions to deliberately hurt the PA and all Palestinians are alarming, immoral, and totally unjustifiable. Madam Senator, or Madam Congresswoman, or Mr. President, I implore you to act with the same moral fiber which Mr. Obama used back when he stood up to Mr. Netanyahu, and shun the ravages of the Israel lobby of complicit American Zionists, be they Jewish or not. And remember, being a good Jew does not necessarily mean being pro-Israel. That is the statement that I sent out to the Prez, my senators, my congresswoman, and the note accompanying the YouTube video to my many, many contacts. That last, very last sentence I have, and remember, being a good Jew does not necessarily mean being pro-Israel. That's directed primarily to one of my senators, Ms. Dianne Feinstein, who is Jewish. But I thought it was important that all the recipients of that message receive that viewpoint. Okay, that's what I sent out. Now, Haaretz is one of the most popular, if the most popular, nationally distributed papers in Israel, Haaretz. And Mr. Gideon Levy is one of their top writers, columnists. So, this is entitled, "This is a Gideon Levy writing in Haaretz, November 29, and Israel that opposes the UN resolution on accepting Palestine as a non-member state, is an Israel that wants to strengthen Hamas and a return of terror." The writer Amos Oz recalls that day 65 years ago in his novel, A Tale of Love and Darkness. Quote, "On Saturday morning," they said, "the General Assembly would convene at a place called Lake Success, and there they would determine our fate. Who is for life and who for destruction," said Mr. Abramski. Abramski was, end quote. Abramski was right. If he were alive today, he would have similar things to say about what will happen tonight in the UN General Assembly. And again, this is from November 29. Who is for life and who for destruction? If Israel was a wise and reasonable country, it would have to join the family of nations this evening, not including Micronesia, and vote proudly for the completion of the previous vote on November 29. Two states for two peoples. And if there were a real peace camp in Israel, its members would flock en masse to the tiny rally being held in front of Independence Hall in Tel Aviv, where the State of Israel was declared. Side note from Wren here, November 29, 1947, was the date that the United Nations passed its resolution recommendation for a division of the former British colony of Palestine between a Jewish state and an Arab state, both to be administered independently and of equal sovereignty. So, November 29, 1947. 4 days ago, November 29, 2012, obviously was a date deliberately set by Palestinians as the date they wanted to submit the resolution to the UN and have it voted upon. That's the significance of the 29th of November. Back to the article. But Israel, as usual, says no. First, hurling childish threats with unparalleled chutzpah, bullying, and condescension. We'll punish the Palestinian Authority. We'll hit it in its pocket. We'll build 3,000 apartments in the settlements. And now, in a weaker voice, we're lowering our profile. And no is still no. Again, this is an article by Mr. Gordon Levy in Haaretz. Returning. When Israel says no, what does it mean? That the talk of two states is one big fraud? That it simply doesn't want peace? That the world can go jump in a lake? That the Palestinians are forbidden to fight for their freedom, either with weapons or with diplomacy? No to Hamas and no to PA President Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, No and no. Jerusalem's thousand no's. Israel will say no tonight, not just to the Palestinians, but to the whole world except its patron, the United States, which will apparently humiliate itself again and draw even more hatred by voting automatically with Israel. Most Israelis will not even ask themselves how we reach the point at which this entire world is against us, whether, perhaps, Israel has some part in it, to which voting against the resolution will only add. The automatic majority, as Israel disparagingly calls the sane majority in the United Nations, will vote for recognition of Palestine as a non-member state. Because that is the right and necessary step to take, Israeli propagandizing wordplay will not help. Quote, a unilateral step, end quote, Israel in its temerity calls it, while Israel builds more and more settlements in a step that is anything but multilateral. A breach of the Oslo Accords, Israel accuses, although Israel never met its obligation for the third phase, which was to have transferred most of the West Bank to Palestinian control 15 years ago. That's according to the 1993 Oslo Accords. Was supposed to have transferred most of the West Bank to the Palestinians 15 years ago, as Israel... pardon? And Israel that opposes the UN resolution is an Israel that wants to strengthen Hamas and a return to terror, return of terror. There is no other way to explain its intransigence. But of all its baseless and foolish reasons for its opposition, one stands out. The danger that after their change of status in the UN, the Palestinians will supposedly appeal to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, which is in the Netherlands, regarding the war crime of moving the population of the occupying state into the occupied territories. What exactly is Israel afraid of? After all, retired Justice Edmund Levy will make it all right. In fact, he already has. The committee he headed has already determined that there is no occupation at all, and the settlements are completely kosher. And so what is there to fear? Evidently, this retired Justice Edmund Levy is retired from some Israeli superior or Supreme Court. Returning. Could it be that despite the acclaimed Levy report, there is something to worry about? After all, the International Criminal Court fights war crimes and is esteemed by the whole world. On the contrary, let Israel send retired Justice Levy to that court to present Israel's justified and persuasive arguments. Mr. Abramski is long dead. So is Mrs. Tosia Krochmal, the neighbor of the young Amos on Amos Street, in the Jerusalem neighborhood of Kerem Avraham, who, 65 years ago, brought the extension cord from the sewing machine in her husband's doll hospital to the Lemberg's house so they could bring their heavy black radio out to their balcony to hear the, quote, voices of Lake Success. This evening, November 29, no one will be listening to the radio. Israel will continue to bury its head in the sand, to disconnect from reality, to ignore the world, ignore justice, and proclaim no. Let me give you the website if you want to want more information on Haaretz or want to see the actual article from Haaretz's online service. http://www.haaretz.com /opinion/november-29.premium-1.481277#. If anyone wants to take issue with what I read here, with what I'm transmitting to the world from Santa Cruz County, California, USA, or for any other reason, if you want to talk to me, please don't be afraid to call right now. Area code 831-427-3772. Second line is 469-3119. And it is 4:34 Pacific Standard Time. In keeping with the topic of the UN and Palestine, let's turn to Mr. Yuri Avneri, who I believe also writes for Haaretz, or whose material has appeared in Haaretz. Interesting article. Now, you can call me at any point. Call me on a phone. You don't have to worry about interrupting me. Oh, also, if you don't want to talk to me live, if you feel better or safer, or that it would be more appropriate, you can contact me. The show's email address is MideastMadness@ecomail.org. MideastMadness@ecomail, ECOMAIL .org. Let's not forget my official Mideast Madness email address. Preface. Hi. If you are not familiar with Mr. Yuri Avneri and you covet a progressive Israeli insider view of the situation in Israel-Palestine, Avneri is an important voice to hear. Dean of Israeli journalists and founder of the oldest Israeli peace movement, Gush Shalom, Avneri provides a progressive view with a long and clear memory. I commend this most recent article and a watchful eye to all his comments. My friend Daryl. Here we go. Yuri Avneri, December 1, 2012. Entitled, The Strong and the Sweet. It was a day of joy. Joy for the Palestinian people. Joy for all those who hope for peace between Israel and the Arab world. And, in a modest way, for me personally. The General Assembly of the United Nations, the highest world forum, has voted overwhelmingly for the recognition of the State of Palestine, though in a limited way. The resolution adopted by the same forum 65 years ago to the day to partition historical Palestine between a Jewish and an Arab state has at long last been reaffirmed. I hope I may be excused a few moments of personal celebration. This is Mr. Avneri writing here. During the war of 1948, which followed the first resolution, I came to the conclusion that there exists a Palestinian people and that the establishment of a Palestinian state next to the new state of Israel is the prerequisite, he underlines, prerequisite for peace. As a simple soldier, I fought in dozens of engagements against the Arab inhabitants of Palestine. I saw how dozens of Arab towns and villages were destroyed and left deserted. Long before I saw the first Egyptian soldier, I saw the people of Palestine, who had started the war, he says, fight for what was their homeland. Before the war, I hope that the unity of the country, so dear to both peoples, could be preserved. The war convinced me that reality had smashed this dream forever. I was still in uniform when, in early 1949, I tried to set up an initiative for what is now called the two-state solution. I met with two young Arabs in Haifa, which is on the coast of northern coast of Israel, for this purpose. One was a Muslim Arab, the other was a Druze sheikh. Both became members of the Knesset before me. Or before I did, he should say. At the time, it looked like Mission Impossible. Palestine, quote-unquote, had been wiped off the map. 78% of the country had become Israel, the other 22% divided between Jordan and Egypt. The very existence of a Palestinian people was vehemently denied by the Israeli establishment. Indeed, the denial became an article of faith. Much later, Golda Meir famously declared that there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. Respected charlatans wrote popular books proving that the Arabs in Palestine were pretenders who had only recently arrived. The Israeli leadership was convinced that the Palestinian problem had disappeared once and forever. Let me read that sentence again so we all know what's going on here. Respected charlatans wrote popular books, quote, proving that the Arabs in Palestine were pretenders who had only recently arrived. The Israeli leadership was convinced that the, quote, Palestinian problem, end quote, had disappeared once and forever. Pardon my five-second break so I may enjoy a refreshing beverage. All right, so it was more than 5 seconds. Where was I? In 1949, there were not 100 persons in the entire world who believed in this solution. Not a single country supported it. The Arab countries still believed that Israel would just disappear. Britain supported its client state, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. The U.S. had its own local strongmen. Stalin, the Soviet Union, supported Israel. Mine was a lonely fight. For the next 40 years, as the editor of a news magazine, I brought the subject up almost every week. For 40 years. When I was elected to the Knesset, I did the same there. In 1968, I went to Washington, D.C. in order to propagate the idea there. I was politely received by the relevant officials in the State Department, Mr. Joseph Sisko, in the White House, Mr. Harold Saunders, and the U.S. Mission to the United Nations, Mr. Charles Yost. Leading senators and congressmen, as well as the British father of Resolution 242, Mr. Lord Caradon. Perhaps I shouldn't say Mr., since he already has the title of Lord, assuming that's not his first name. The British father of Resolution 242, Lord Caradon. The uniform answer from all of them, without exception, a Palestinian state was out of question. Out of the question. When I published a book devoted to this solution, the PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization, in Beirut, Lebanon, attacked me in 1970 in a book entitled Yuri Avneri and Neo-Zionism. Today, there is a world consensus that a solution of the conflict without a Palestinian state is quite out of the question. So why not celebrate now? Why now? Why didn't it happen before or later? Because of the pillar of cloud, the historic masterpiece from Benjamin Netanyahu, Ehud Barak, and Avigdor Lieberman. The Bible tells us about Samson the hero, who rent a lion with his bare hands. When he returned to the scene, a swarm of bees had made the carcass of the lion its home and produced honey. So Samson posed a riddle to the Philistines back in ancient times. Quote, out of the strong came forth sweetness, end quote. This is now a Hebrew proverb. Well, out of the strong Israeli operation against Gaza, sweetness has indeed come forth. It is another confirmation of the rule that when you start a war or a revolution, you never know what will come out of it. One of the results of the operation was that the prestige and popularity of Hamas shot sky high, while the Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank sank to new depths. That was a result the West could not possibly tolerate. The defeat of the, quote, moderates and the victory for the Islamic, quote, extremists were a disaster for President Barack Obama and the entire Western camp. Something had to found, with all urgency, to provide Abbas with the resounding achievement. Fortunately, Abbas was already on the way to obtain UN approval for the recognition of Palestine as a state, though not yet a full member of the World Organization. For Abbas, it was a move of despair. Suddenly, it became a beacon of victory. Again, this I'm reading from an article written by Yuri Avneri last Saturday, December 1st, entitled The Strong and the Sweet. The article appeared in Haaretz newspaper. Or magazine, I'm not sure which. Returning. The competition between the Hamas and Fatah movements is viewed as a disaster for the Palestinian cause. But there is also another way to look at it. Let's go back in our own history. During the 30s and 40s, our struggle for liberation, as we called it, split between two camps who hated each other with growing intensity. On the one side was the, quote, official leadership led by David Ben-Gurion, represented by the Jewish Agency, which cooperated with the British administration. Its military arm was the Haganah, a very large, semi-official militia mostly tolerated by the British. On the other side was the Irgun, or National Military Organization, the far more radical armed wing of the Nationalist Revisionist Party of Vladimir Jabotinsky. It split, and yet another, even more radical organization was born. The British called it the Stern Gang, after its leader, Avraham Stern. The enmity between these organizations was intense. For a time, Haganah members kidnapped Irgun fighters and turned them over to the British police, who tortured them and sent them to camps in Africa. A bloody fratricidal war was avoided only because the Irgun leader, Menachem Begin, future Prime Minister of Israel, forbade all actions of revenge. By contrast, the Stern people bluntly told the Haganah that they would shoot anyone trying to attack their members. The enmity... Oh, no, I already read that. In retrospect, the two sides can be seen as acting as the two arms of the same body. The terrorism, quote-unquote, of the Irgun and Stern complemented the diplomacy of the Zionist leadership. The diplomats exploited the achievements of the fighters. In order to counterbalance the growing popularity of the terrorists, the British made concessions to Ben-Gurion. A friend of mine called the Irgun the shooting agency of the Jewish agency. In a way, this is now the situation in the Palestinian camp. You're almost through, folks. For years, the Israeli government has threatened Abbas with the most dire consequences if he dared to go to the UN. Abolishing the Oslo Agreement and destroying the Palestinian Authority was the bare minimum. Lieberman called the move diplomatic terrorism. And now, nothing. Not a bang and barely a whimper. Even Netanyahu, the current prime minister of the state of Israel, understands that the pillar of cloud has created a situation where world support for Abbas has become inevitable. What to do? Nothing. Pretend the whole thing is a joke. Who cares? What is the UNO anyway? What difference does it make? Netanyahu is more concerned about another thing that happened to him this week. In the Likud primary elections, Likud refers to Mr. Netanyahu's far right-wing political party. In the Likud primary elections, all the moderates, quote-unquote, in his party were unceremoniously kicked out. No liberal democratic alibi was left. The Likud Baitenu faction in the next Knesset will be composed entirely of right-wing extremists, among them several outright fascists, people who want to destroy the independence of the Supreme Court, cover the West Bank densely with settlements, and prevent peace and a Palestinian state by all means, by all possible means. While Netanyahu is sure to win the coming elections and continue to serve as prime minister, he is too clever not to realize where he is now. A hostage to extremists, liable to be thrown out by his own Knesset faction if he so much as mentions peace, to be displaced at any time by Lieberman or worse. On first sight, nothing much has changed, but only on first sight. What has happened is that the foundation of the state of Palestine has now been officially acknowledged as the aim of the world community. The two-state solution is now the only solution on the table. The one-state solution, if it ever lived, is as dead as the dodo. Of course, the apartheid one-state is reality. If nothing changes on the ground, it will become deeper and deeper, deeper and stronger. Almost every day brings news of it becoming more and more entrenched. And then parenthetically, Mr. Avneri says, the bus monopoly has just announced that from now on there will be separate buses for West Bank Palestinians in Israel. But the quest for peace, based on the coexistence between Israel and Palestine, has taken a big step forwards. Unity between the Palestinians should be the next. United States support for the actual creation of the state of Palestine should come soon after. The strong must lead to the sweet. Again, this article by Uri Avneri appeared 2 days ago, December 1st, in Haaretz, Israeli news periodical. Folks, you're still not calling me. I'm sure the phones are working here. My first inclination is to believe that no one is listening. My Shoutcast program here on our computer indicates that only one person in the entire cyber world is listening, and I know who that person is. But there may be an unknown number of people, albeit very small, within the listening range of our radio broadcast signal at 101.3 on the FM band. We do not have a K identification, letter K. We are FRSC, Freak Radio Santa Cruz. If you do hear me, I consider it personally vital. Certainly to myself and to Free Radio, and ultimately for the cause of peace and justice, that you call in. I believe you are out there. I've certainly handed out enough of my business cards, reminding people that every Monday at 4 p.m., I'm here with Mideast Madness. I'm Ren Tawil. I ask again for everyone to boycott the SodaStream product, which is manufactured in an illegal Israeli settlement in the West Bank. That's Palestinian territory. The Jewish settlers there are stealing Palestinian water, land, and other resources, and Palestinians don't see one shekel of profit from this. You'll be supporting Israeli settler fascism and hegemony if you do buy it. We need a new space near downtown, 24-hour access with a bathroom, 150 square feet, give or take, no more than $300 a month. We need a new studio. Please let us know via our website, which is freakradio.org. Mail your contributions to keep us going here to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, S-A-N-T-A, second word, C-R-U-Z, California, USA, zip code 95061. Thank you for listening. I'll talk at you next Monday. Stay tuned for Palestine Today.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, November 30th.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org. For Monday, December 3rd, 2012. A Palestinian man killed by Israeli soldiers' gunfire in the West Bank and Israeli attacks against Gaza fishermen escalates. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A Palestinian man was killed on Monday by Israeli troops' gunfire at a checkpoint near the northern West Bank city of Tul Karim. Eyewitnesses told local news that soldiers refused to allow ambulance crews from reaching the man when he was shot. Local sources identified the man as Hatim Shadid, 38, from the village of Allar near Tul Karim. According to witnesses, soldiers chased Shadid and rammed his car off-road, then opened fire at him, killing him. Israeli sources said that soldiers suspected the man of having a shuffle in his car. In other news, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, PCHR, announced that Israeli attacks against fishermen in Gaza escalated despite the Israeli authorities' announcement of allowing the fishermen to fish.